This recording is that of a direct voice seance in which a communicator from the world of spirit, by the name of Mike Fearon, speaks with his mother. Mike Fearon was a young officer in the Royal Air Force who was shot down on D-Day in the last war. I have interviewed his mother, and she is certain and satisfied that she has spoken to her son. I also have in my possession a photograph of the communicator, Mike Fearon.
Hello, Mama.
Hello, darling. Seems donkey's years since we spoke, doesn't it?
Yes, I suppose it does, really.
Oh, a terrible time, Mike.
But I've been so constantly with you. I mean, I come pretty well every day that...
I can feel you well.
I never sort of feel out of touch.
Oh, you aren't out of touch.
Probably you feel out of touch in as much as you don't have the opportunity to speak to me very often, but I never feel out of touch because
but
I come
it's nicer to speak aloud, isn't it, Mike?
Oh, well, it's much more satisfactory,
that's
obviously.
What
I mean, I love coming to talk to you. It's a wonderful opportunity, and it means so much to me, as indeed it does to everybody who has the opportunity to come through and speak to those who they love on earth.
I know. Speaking
it would make such a vast difference to people if they understood this and realised that death isn't what they think it is. It isn't this severing
of
the contact between us.
There is no death.
It's only an illusion.
Mm.
Man has created death in his own mind. It doesn't really exist any in his own mind.
I wonder why they did.
Well, I suppose it's because they were so materialistic in as much that they lived completely and wholly and solely for materialism. That when someone that they've known and loved leaves them, as they think, that is in the physical sense, then as far as they're concerned, that's the end of it. Good, there have always been people who believed in something after death, but never quite understood what it was.
No, they believed in sort of resurrection and the distant future.
Well, of course,
didn't
the point
they?
Is that man has always sort of looked upon life as something purely materialistic, that when they started creating in their own minds an idea of a new life, or a new heaven, or a new existence, call it what you will, they assumed that it would be in a physical body. They could never sort of, even then, get away from the old materialistic conception. Even today, I mean, after all said and done, untold thousands of people who believe in a life after death, their conception of it is extraordinarily materialistic. And many, many people who, I suppose, the world calls religious or in some senses good anyway, because they conform to certain creeds or dogmas and so on, they think that they're coming back upon the earth in a material form on the great day, as it were. Really, when you come to think about it, the things that some people believe are quite fantastic.
Absolutely.
And yet it's all man-made. There's not a scrap of evidence to support their theories, and yet the church, taking it as a whole, does still preach this ridiculous idea of heaven and hell. Heaven if you've been awfully good and you've followed certain tenets and so on, and hell if you haven't sort of followed what they think is right. Really, when one comes to analyse it, it doesn't hold water at all.
No. Mike,
actually, I always feel that that man has limited himself by his own attitude and outlook.
Well, it isn't that he limits himself, is it?
No, not only in that exactly, but the point is that man limits God to a great extent by his own limitation. I mean, once man can rid himself of materialism as regards the things that appertain to the things of the spirit, which may sound perhaps a little bit complicated, but it's extraordinary how man even assumes that spiritual things have a materialistic
basis. They can't get away from the materialism.
No, the point is that they can only think and see and understand something that is physically tangible to them. When a thing gets beyond that, they can't grasp it at all.
Last time I was here, you said, for heaven's sake, whatever you bring, don't bring any parsons.
I don't want to sound prejudiced, but I'm afraid I haven't got very much time for the church or for so many who adhere to it, because their minds are so narrowed, unbelievably narrowed, that they cannot get beyond a certain point. They can accept only that which falls in a certain degree within their own experience or their own belief. They're so limited by their own knowledge, if you can call it knowledge.
Yes, want of knowledge.
Yes, well, probably that'd be more true to say, but I give the benefit of the doubt. Point is that they have so, as it were,
tried to think.
Yes, well, I mean, the whole point is that they've put it all in a little nutshell, if you can put it like that. They think they've got all knowledge which is contained in a nutshell, whereas actually, of course, its knowledge is something so vast, so tremendous, that even the most highly evolved can only grasp a small percentage of it. But they seem to think that what is contained, shall we say, in the Bible from cover to cover is all there is to know. They can't accept anything beyond that. And even then, although they say they accept all that they read in the Bible, very few people, if they're honest, do.
Yes, but then they don't interpret it right, do they?
Well, the whole point is that the Bible, obviously, there's much truth, there's much goodness in the Bible. I mean, in the simple teachings of Jesus, if one were to follow in the example that he set, then man could not go far wrong in his material life and the things that he did. And his outlook and his spiritual development would, in consequence, be great. But the point is that they try to narrow things down to such a degree, they try to make out of the simple truths of Jesus so much that is complex and involved, they try to tag on so much over the centuries that have nothing whatever to do with Jesus. I mean, the virgin birth, I mean, for instance, is as old as the hills. It was the basis of practically every ancient religion. That obviously crept in centuries after the passing of death of Jesus, had no foundation in fact at all. There's so much mythology.
No, it's not true.
There's so much that is mythical that they've tacked on and made it all so mysterious and so sort of difficult for the intelligent person to believe that so many people in consequence, obviously over the years, as they have become more educated and more intelligent and they think more deeply for themselves, obviously just can't accept it, and in consequence the churches have lost ground constantly, increasingly over the years. The church holds on to so much that has no foundation in fact.
Yes, and they've built up a lot themselves, haven't they, that doesn't bear on it at all. I mean, all their dogma and all that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, what is the church service when it's analysed? Repetition, from beginning to end, has been going on for years and years and years. Who can go on singing the same old hymns or the same banal words and have any faith or belief and feeling about them?
Then you wouldn't go to church at all.
And then consider the peculiar manner in which often a clergyman gives an address. I mean, that awful, toneless, humdrum, miserable voice. I mean, it's enough to drive a person out of church.
Yes, but Mike, you must remember this. Everything's expected of them. And they're paid practically nothing.
Well, I would say they're paid far more than they're worth, but still about that.
No, I don't agree with you. I think there's an awful lot of kindness and good work.
Mother.
But jolly little.
Yes.
I'll agree with you, Mike, with that.
Our point is this, that I think the point is that although there are very good people, as the world terms good anyway, in the church, that is, working in the church and serving in the church and also among its adherents, the point is that what is the point in going round and round in a circle which has no beginning and no end, where you just don't achieve anything? I mean, I'm prejudiced against the church for various very good reasons.
And yes,
when I say this,
when
I say this, I speak for untold millions of people here.
Yes.
The church has never lifted its finger against war.
No, I quite agree with
now,
you.
Now, take the recent war and the war before that. What did the church do to help stop it? Did they proclaim the simple teachings of Jesus, who was the Prince of Peace, and come solidly out against war? No,
no.
They didn't.
No.
What did
they lost their
what power. Did the Pope do during the war? Did he say, I'll excommunicate every Roman Catholic who takes part in war? Of course he didn't. But if he had have done that, there's no doubt that Italy would never have come into the war, because being such a strong Roman Catholic country, they would not have dared to go against their Pope. I mean, the point is that the Church preaches the Prince of Peace and yet doesn't follow his example.
That's in times of need.
There's nothing more important than following the simple teachings that Jesus gave. I am all for Jesus, but I am far, far removed from the Church. And I'm very, very proud and very happy to say it.
Yes.
That's why I think this inquiry of the church into this subject, of no, there are good people in it and sincere ones, will achieve nothing, because the prejudice of the church is so great, and they object deep down within them to any other person or group of persons setting up anything which may take away their power. The church has always thrived on two things, fear and power. And take those things away, they have nothing left.
Oh, well, I think you're a spot hard on them, Mike.
I am very hard on them. I intend to be hard on them. Because until we rid ourselves of the shackles of the church, there can be no true spiritual progress for humanity. The church has done good in certain respects, I don't deny that, but it's done untold harm. Over the centuries, innumerable people have died terrible, tragic, untimely deaths at the hands of the church.
Yes.
Because people didn't believe in their particular beliefs or particular creed or dogma.
Mm.
The whole point is the church has always been against human progress. It's never, never gone forward step by step with humanity. It's always stood its ground, hard, darned hard ground, believe me.
Yes, well,
and if you haven't bowed the head to the church, God help you.
Listen, how would you get it, this religion of Jesus, to the masses?
Every man can find Jesus within himself.
Yes, but
nevertheless,
he doesn't.
If he reads his Bible and uses wisdom and discretion, he can find the truth therein, but he has to learn how to discard all the things which have been added to it, often by churchmen over the centuries, for their own ends.
Yes. To me, the Quakers come nearer than anybody.
I agree with you. The Quakers, in my opinion, are nearest, possibly, to real Christians.
Yes.
More near than any Orthodox religious body.
Yes, I agree.
After all, they sit and wait for the Spirit to move them. They have no creed, form, or ceremony. They gather together humbly to worship God and to ask His divine guidance. And they wait for the Spirit to move them. Actually, they are nearer spiritualists. And when I use the term spiritualist, I mean true spiritualists.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there aren't very many true spiritualists in the real sense of the word.
Mm. Yes.
I know that at times I must strike you as being very sort of hard on the Orthodox Church.
I don't.
But I think its history speaks for itself. Its history is its own condemnation.
Yes.
I don't come to condemn any more than anyone else. We leave it to the conscience of the individual or the group of individuals, and I think the church's record is pretty grim.
Yeah,
I agree with you on that point.
I'm not the slightest bit interested in this church inquiry, because I don't think it will get anywhere at all, because they'll cling to their little narrow ideas and their creeds and their dogmas, and they'll try and swap this truth, which is as free as the air, with it. They'll try and swamp this wonderful, glorious truth with their own creeds and dogmas and confine it to the church. They'll do more harm than good in the long run.
Yes, well, supposing you've got to come back to earth, what line would you take here?
In what way do you mean exactly?
Well, I mean, how would you get religion, real religion, to the masses? Half of them, more than half of them, don't read the Bible. And they don't, if they do, they don't practice it in their everyday life. How would you get to them, Mike?
I know
it's all right to be destructive, dear.
I know it's a big problem, but I would say that one of the most important ways to get religion, and I use that in a sense,
yes,
actually, the
word
religion, put it like that then, the teachings of Christ, if one were to get the teachings of Christ to the masses, one would endeavor to do, shall we say, what Christ did, that is, set an example.
Yes.
Unless you set an example yourself, you cannot expect people to follow you. I mean, so many Christians, for instance, talk so glibly about Christ and attend their church regularly, for instance, but they're by far a long way from setting an example.
I quite agree.
And after all, Christ did the things that he did because he understood his inner divinity and his, shall we say, oneness with God. I mean, for instance, so much that the Christ did in the form of miracles. You term them miracles because you don't understand them, and
yes.
miracles are miracles because you don't understand how it's done.
Yes.
But the point is that Christ knew what today his followers do not know. He knew the power within himself. From within yourself comes opportunity and power to do great things. Christ was able to heal the sick. Christ was able even to raise the dead. And so many other things that one reads about, he did. Does the church do it? Do the clergymen do it?
They're coming to it a bit, huh?
Yes, very slowly. But did it ever come from within the church? Oh, no. It came from without the church. And now the church is beginning to realize there might be something in it, and they might be, in consequence, be able to make good use of it and bring people back into the church. Their motives are ulterior, in my opinion, not good.
Yes.
They want to get people back into the church. They want to make the church powerful again. And
yes.
so they realize that that which has been going on outside the church, people who found truth outside the church, they might be able to bring it into the church. But what about those who are still outside and because of their freedom of thought and will have been able to make progress with this great truth? It is because the people outside the church have been free of the shackles of the church. They have made spiritual progress, and the church has in consequence have lost a great deal. But now the church is getting frightened. It wants to drag them back. And you'll find that ere long, if it is brought back into the church to some degree, that they'll try and strangle it and make it impossible for people to be free outside the church. The church has always wanted to strangle people outside, wanted to keep things to itself. I have no time, patience, or interest in the church.
No. Difficult. It's a terribly difficult subject down here, Mike. You see, you get a sort of air view of it, you know, from above.
Well, I'm sorry if I sound vehement.
No, I don't.
But I'm not sorry in a sense, because I know that freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom in so many different forms exists much more outside the church than within it.
Yes.
The church wants you to go its way in its narrow little confine. And if you accept and believe as the church would have you believe, then you are all right when you come here, which, believe me, is a lot of hooey. Because a lot of the people who had this narrow concept of life and religion, if you like to use the term, through the church, found things vastly different when they came here. In fact, they were hampered in their progress because of the narrow beliefs that they'd got. In fact, some people coming here, believing that they were really God's elect, that they were the chosen ones, still exist over here in a certain sphere, believing that they are the only persons who still exist in this world. They are blind to any other form of life or advancement. They are so narrowed in their outlook that they really and genuinely think that they are the only ones who've been reborn, as they term it. And even they are waiting to come back on earth in a physical shape,
waiting
for the resurrection of the body. All these false teachings that the church has given over the centuries has done untold harm to untold millions of people and separated families and individuals. Believe me, the church has much to answer for, and I have little or no interest really for it whatsoever. And all this recent probing that is going on into this truth, although I know there are sincere people in it, at the same time, I feel the outcome will not be good. While spiritualism is free, it has chance to breathe and make progress, and individuals can feel and think and accept what they can accept by their development of mind and of spirit freely and make progress. But once it is brought into the confines of the church with all its rigmarole, with all its superstition, with all its nonsense, it will stifle it again.
Mike, when you first got over, what did you feel like about it? This didn't come to you straight away, did it?
It didn't come to me straight away, no. But fortunately, I wasn't hide-bound and creed-bound and priest-bound like so many were.
No.
I was able to think clearly, and I was able to make progress because of the freedom of my thought. And I was able to contact many souls who'd made great spiritual advancement, and they were able to help me in so many ways. And I was able to come back to you very soon afterwards.
Yes.
And I noticed, when you needed help, it wasn't the church that gave it to you.
My dear, it's jolly difficult to get help, isn't it? Especially in the world as it is.
We come to break down the barriers that lie between men, to break down the barriers that man has created by racial intolerance and hatred, by creed and by dogma. We come down that we might in some measure bring all peoples together as one family under one God. We have a purpose and a mission. We are not interested in powers and principalities. We're not interested in churches and in creeds and in dogmas. We're not interested in all the things that hold man to earth. We are interested in the things that make them free, that make them well and happy in spirit and in mind and in body. We come that we might in some measure make your world a better place to live in for the people who follow after you, that they might be born free in their mind to live and to love and to learn and to understand the things that are of God. We have great purpose in coming, Mother. We are not interested in the church. We are not interested in institutions as such. We are interested only in individuals, collectively and individually. We come to break down all the barriers that time and man has in his ignorance created. We know that we can do great things, but we know we can only do it when man's mind is freed from the shackles that bind him to the earth. And in my opinion, creed and dogma are two of the most difficult things to rid them of. And that's one of our courses that we have to take to break down the stronghold of the church. For the church's foundation is still strong, even though it's toppling. We know that there is no strength in the church because there never has been true spirituality in it.
I agree with you, Mike. I get more help from you than from anybody, but I thought perhaps you know it was my fault.
No. I know that there's only one way to salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is by man's own desire for goodness within himself to be made manifest upon the earth. That man himself, within himself, has great strength of character, great strength of spirit. And that if he will look into himself and bring forth that which he finds, as Jesus did, nothing is impossible. The church will not do that for you. An individual must do it for himself. But we can show the way, and we can give great help and aid to those who seek and strive. Once a man begins to seek and strive within himself for greater things, then we can help him greatly. I know that there's much that we have to do. Sometimes it seems almost impossible to us to do it, but we can and we shall do it, for that which we are doing is not only our work, it is greater than ourselves, because we are but instruments of God. We do the work of God, and we do it freely. We have no axe to grind. We do it because we love humanity, because we want to prevent humanity making the mistakes it has made over many years that have passed. We want the truth to shine forth and make men free.
You helped me a lot.
We have a great purpose in coming. Believe me.
I'm sure you have. A pity more people can't hear it.
Could you give me some idea, Mike, what happens to the people that's so bound to creeds and dogma when they pass to the other side? The first passing, when they die.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, the point is that a man immediately after death is no different to what he was 5 minutes before. That is, in regard to his outlook and his character and his personality and so on. And therefore, a person who has very strong religious convictions still holds them very strongly when he comes here. But he begins to realize that he's rather like a fish out of water. And he begins to realize that a lot of his old ideas and teachings and creeds and so on just don't apply. They don't fit. They just are not, shall we say, natural here. Because the first thing he realizes is that everything here is normal, everything here is natural. People are in themselves very much the same as they were on earth. But without all the heaviness, if I can use such an expression, of the material life, without all the old ideas which kept them back in their mental and spiritual progress, he begins to realize that many of the old ideas he had were purely man's material conception of a heaven and of God. He begins to realize that life here is a normal, natural thing, that all around him is great beauty in many, many forms, and that he himself is exactly himself as he was, but much that he held fast to, and which he thought would, shall we say, make for himself a heaven because of his beliefs, he finds is not necessarily so, that many, many phases of life exist, and that he himself must adjust himself to his condition in which he finds himself. And of course there are always those who will meet him friends and relations, people he's known and loved and who still love him, and they will talk to him and endeavour to make him realise that he has to rid himself of much that he thought was true when on earth, and make himself, as it were, mentally free to be able to adjust himself to his new form of existence. I mean, so many people have such a hazy idea of what life is like or could be like on this side, and those who have very orthodox, strong views, Christian if you like, they really do believe that they are elected, as it were, for a phase of life which is far superior to any other, which of course is not so, because man is a complex creature in so many different ways, in so many shapes and forms, and there is no person who is so good and no person who is so bad. In all there are redeeming features, and because you believe certain tenets doesn't make you a better person. What makes a person better is the things that they have done, the thoughts and the actions, and the things that have helped to make that person a character or an individual. Just because you believe in a certain something doesn't save you, doesn't make you a supreme being, doesn't make you worthy, shall we say, to become one of God's elect. Every man must find for himself his own path of progress, and of course it goes through many phases and many states of existence and takes generations of time. The earth life is merely a short phase in one's existence, and it is important that one should have to go through it and learn all that one can. But the reason that one comes into the earth is not what you can take out of it, but rather what you can put into it. From within yourself, the spirit which is there, which can guide and give you strength and give you the path, the illumination, as it were, is so often hidden. In fact, in 99 cases out of 100 or more, is hidden, because man is taught when on earth to develop his material powers, his brain, how to earn a living in different ways, and so many things he is taught. But he's never taught the things of the spirit. Admittedly, he may go to a Sunday school and then graduate into a church, but what does it teach him? It teaches him the most narrow of all conceptions of the spirit. It doesn't give him spiritual freedom. It doesn't give him a path to tread that will really lighten his path and make it one of usefulness, as I see it. Unless a religion is completely free, a belief is completely free from within oneself, where one can sort of expand and grow and not be held down and shackled down by creed and a dogma which holds no weight in time and in truth, then it is of no use. Life is entirely up to the individual. I know that to a certain extent a person's life is affected by conditions around him, by relations and friends and business, and so many things affect a man and make it impossible sometimes for him to do the things he'd like to do. But nevertheless, man has, to a great extent, free will, in which he can do the things which are within his conscience. And every man has a conscience, and the point is that one's conscience can be one's guide. I don't say it can always be entirely a safe guide, because even there, consciences differ according to the individual. What is evil to one man may not necessarily be evil to another. But the point is that there is a path that all can tread, within which one can do so much that will not only help oneself to progress spiritually and mentally, but to help those around and about you. As Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. How many people do that, even among so-called professing Christians? The point is, there is no greatness in power, there is no greatness in even tradition, although some people would like you to have it so. The point is that power comes from humility, from kindliness, from sympathy, from love, from sharing all that you have with others. I don't mean by that just merely mercenary material things. The things that help man to grow are the things which are purely and wholly of the spirit. And every man has within himself the spirit of God. To bring that out, Jesus said that you should look within yourself. And it is true that within yourself you'll find all that you need. For as you begin to understand that you have within yourself that power of God, so you begin to grow and expand and become, as it were, more holy of God. There are no limits that are set to man if he will follow the right path and seek to develop the spirit within himself. The church, I know we get back to the church with unfailing regularity, but the point is that the church does not encourage man to develop the powers of the spirit. In fact, it discourages him, because if you were to go to a church and you were to declare that you had seen this or experienced that, the first thing they'd think was that you were a little bit peculiar in the head, to say the least of it. The clergy, who should know most, know so little. Their task is to heal the sick. Their task is to comfort those who mourn with knowledge, not with just platitudes and, well, it might be this or it might be that, and if she or he has believed in the tenets of the church and so on, that all is well. I mean, the whole point is the church is blind, has been blind for centuries, untold centuries. It just does not express the things that are, as I see it, of God, in the complete real sense that they should. They have a little truth which they've swamped with so much that is of materialistic conception. Life is, to a great extent, on both sides, what you yourself have made it. A man is no more or no less than what he has become through his own experience. A man can be great or he can be very, very low in the scale of things. The church could be such a leader in these things, but it isn't. That's a tragedy. I know I must sound, and I must admit I am, very prejudiced, because I have seen only too well the results of two wars. Although the first one I knew nothing, I've seen the results in as much that I've met many here who passed over through the first war, and of course many of my friends in the second war, and I know only too well the church could have done so much, but it did nothing, because it is only concerned with its own material power and aggrandizement. And this new searching into this truth which the church is making, though there are good people in it, sincere ones, nevertheless, I feel, and I know I'm right in saying, will lead nowhere. Certainly, the church will strangle it if it can, as it strangled everything that's of real advancement.
Yes, I agree with you.
Can you imagine a bishop or an archbishop standing down, shall we say, in place of a medium who has the power to bring through some great soul from this side, who can give an oration that would put the archbishop into shame? Do you think an archbishop would, for instance, demean himself in his own estimation to stand aside and allow an ordinary person who is not of the church, uneducated as that may be, to stand in the pulpit and give an oration which would shame the archbishop? The archbishop's and all those who hold sway are concerned more with their own personal affairs. Besides, there's so much that one could go into, which probably there's no point at the moment in doing. But I have little or no faith in the church. It's failed generations, untold generations of souls, and it'll go on failing them until gradually it will disappear.
And then what?
Then, by that time, this truth will have made such tremendous progress that minds will be free of dogmas and creeds, and man will know for himself in various shapes and forms and ways. And also, although I have little patience in a sense with science, inasmuch that often the things that science brings forth are for destruction rather for construction, yet nevertheless even scientists will turn more and more to this truth, and from it they will be able to learn much, and they will be helped and guided. And if we find, as I think we shall, the individuals whom we are seeking, we shall perfect an instrument in the years to come which will make possible communication between our world and yours in such a way that there can be no skepticism, which will in itself be such a revolutionary thing that it will forever break down the power of the church. Follow the teachings of Jesus. Follow his example. It is the greatest and the most glorious example in the whole human history. But at the same time, do not allow the church to make you accept its interpretation of a mythical Jesus wrapped in mystery. Jesus was humble, but the church would make him so great that he would be unapproachable by you. Jesus did not want to set up a religion. Jesus didn't come to form a religion. Jesus came to show the path that man might follow it. But the church, to a great extent, has hidden that path from the eyes and the minds of the people.
Yes, I feel sure you're right.
Yes,
I must go.
Well, dearie.
I haven't said one tenth of what I wanted to say.
Well, but
and
you
what
know
I have
chance.
Said, I've not said perhaps as well as I might. And if I have sounded just a little bit, well, prejudice, I suppose. It isn't really prejudice.
No.
It's only that I, and untold millions of souls here, who suffered over the last few years through war, which could have been prevented if the church, to a certain extent, had made some attempt to play its part, instead of praising, if they had condemned, much might have been avoided. I do not trust the church, because it has always failed humanity in its hour of need. But I suppose we must try to be a little bit more forbearing to the church, but I find it very difficult, believe me, because I know so much unhappiness, so much misery could have been prevented if the church used its strength, which it has to a certain extent still got, to prevent war.
I quite agree, Mike.
But when they bless the soldiers, when they bless the flags, when they bless the ships, when they bless the guns, and when they ask God for help in their wars, how can you respect them?
I didn't go inside the church last war. I couldn't.
Well, I must go. Goodbye.
Goodbye, and God bless.
Goodbye.
You.
Goodbye.
And that is how the seance in which Mike Fearon spoke to his mother came to an end.